is Loretta McDonough, and this is Sweepy Podcast, The Early Years. Okay, today I came all the way in on the bus with my little recorder and to meet Sabrina Ryan from SIP2. I met Sabrina in Keeping the Child in Mind in beautiful premises up there in Wood Quay, isn't it, there along the quays? And she had some really good things to say. She was asking questions and I thought the questions were appropriate. So I kind of got her in a corner and I asked her, would she have a chat with me? And from there, we just passed emails and here we are today on a lovely Friday afternoon in Liberty Hall. It's a piece of history. Is that right, Sabrina?
It absolutely is. It's an absolutely beautiful building, and I'm using the word beautiful, I suppose, kind of lightly, because I've had this argument with so many of my friends that it is a beautiful building. You know, it is an iconic building.
It is an iconic building.
And it's definitely a little piece of history. And currently we are sitting in the quiet, soundproofed underbelly of Liberty Hall. It's quite chilly down here, you know, it's pretty nice little space.
Yeah, it's like where the band members practice. So we're grand. So if we fancy doing a little tune later on, Sabrina, we have an L guitar and some sort of instrument underneath the table.
Have you seen the harp, actually?
Oh gosh, I've always wanted to play harp.
I love that the listeners are like, what kind of a room are they sitting in?
So it's all grand, so we're very comfortable. Now, Sabrina, I know nothing about unions. The last thing that I ever had dealing with union was when I was a young girl, lady, and I worked in a bar. And there was a union for the Bar Association, I think, veterans or something like that. Anyway, I was part of their union as part of your wages, and we went on strike once, I think, and I got a day off work, and that's what I remember, and that's the only thing I know about unions. So first of all, tell me how you got here. How you got this job, and what are you doing? What's your plans for? Why are you here? What are you about?
So Loretta, thank you so much for inviting me onto the podcast. It's an absolute pleasure to talk to you, and I'm really interested in the idea that when people hear the words union, they automatically associate the word strike.
Yes.
And you know, I mean, we cannot change that. A lot of people will go to that kind of association with it because it's the very visual representation of unions. For me, a union is basically about the power of the people to have control over, and not even control, to have influence over the situation in which they are in. And there is that old saying that, you know, united we stand and divided we fall, which is really what it's all about. It's about people who are working in different industries coming together in order to get a fairer deal for themselves as workers, but also across industries as well.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what the lovely philosophical view of the world from unions are.
Right.
Now, how I got here is quite a roller coaster. I have worked in a couple of different professions and a couple of different jobs, and I've taken a few career changes on my path, and I'm not even 30, so it's quite interesting that I've had a few career changes. I originally went to university and did journalism, which has basically no money in it.
Right,
and I spent a couple of years working in a coffee shop in Northside Shopping Centre, actually, and it was very character building because it was my first venture into precarious work.
Right.
And this would be about maybe, oh my God, maybe 10 years ago at this point.
Yeah. And so you're talking low pay, long hours, unsociable hours, and just
precisely
doing what you're told to get the pay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Low pay, long hours, unsociable hours, evenings, weekends, no contracts, you know, pretty tenuous links to pretty tenuous view of employment law, and there was a constant threat of, you know, you do what you're told because you should be lucky to have the job.
Yes.
Which is a situation that I think has actually become more and more prevalent in Irish society as you know, the years of austerity and the recession has an awful lot to be blamed for. And apparently, whether or not you believe it is a whole other story, we're out the other side of the recession.
Yeah.
And we're supposed to be in a period of growth. Many people don't really feel that quite yet. But a lot of the impact that the recession and austerity had on employment, we haven't really recovered from these things.
No.
So over the years, like, when I always go back to like the employment that my parents had, and even my older brothers and sisters had, you know, there was contracts. there was sick pay, there was pensions. Now, very often, particularly for younger people, and, you know, some of the not so younger people, these things are seen as a luxury.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, if I hear of one of my friends getting a job that has a pension now, I'm like, ooh, you've hit the jackpot. Yeah, fantastic. Yeah. Whereas realistically, we have people who are going into employment who will be going into employment for 40 years. And when they retire, it's kind of like, thanks very much, good luck, and out the door. Sick pay is a huge, huge issue. I know from my own experience of, I probably have worked for about 8 years without any sick pay. And it has a detrimental effect on your life, because you have a situation where in my previous job, I did not have any sick pay, mm-hmm. which meant that and a lot of people who are listening to this in the early years education sector will totally understand what I'm talking about. If you're sick, you have a choice to make where, okay, do I take the day off and go to the doctor? I lose my day's pay. I have to pay out for the doctor. Ah, no, I can't afford that because I've got to pay 60 quid to the doctor and then I might have a prescription. Maybe the old chest infection will clear up itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that has a detrimental long-term effect on your health. And I feel very, very strongly about that access to healthcare in that situation. We're living in an unequal world. Mm-hmm. We are living in a completely callous, unequal world where your ability to access healthcare like that, because, oh dear, am I going to have to lose a day's wages? It's not good enough. It's absolutely not good enough. And if we actually look into the early year sector,
mm-hmm.
and we're looking at people who are working in childcare and childcare and education, it's 98% female.
Yeah, it is.
This has a disproportionate effect on women's lives. So that's a huge, huge situation. I've kind of gone off on a bit of a tangent.
No, but I think what you say is true, because it's the little things. And I think if, as a practitioner myself and a working practitioner, I go to work every day. And I work for myself, so I don't get sick pay.
Yeah.
And the girls that work for me don't get sick pay. So you're either taking your holidays, you're taking time, you're trying to work up the time that you take sick. And you are right. Like, it's the basic. It's the basic human right to be able that if you're not sick and you're unwell, to be able to take time off without worrying how you're going to pay your, you know, your wages are going to be docked, or you're not going to get enough wages this week, or at the end of the month, you're going to miss those hours. And I feel that even before sick pay is the rate of pay.
Yes.
Like, that's a huge thing for early years. And I tell you one thing, as a story, I started in 1996 when I opened my own preschool, and I think our rate of pay was £9.50.
£9.50. Okay.
Now, not a lot has changed.
I think if you were to actually factor in inflation and kind of when we look at like wages in real terms, the actual situation would have actually regressed quite a bit.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to go from pounds into euro.
Yeah.
And you know, I think the situation that you would have been in, which would have been, what, 23 years ago,
yeah.
The situation now, it's actually probably the actual, in real terms, that income is probably lower.
Yeah.
Now, the Pobl report that was published back in
2017, was it? No, it was last year. There's another one, is there?
The sector profile for 2018 was published in November.
Okay.
And they sent out a survey to all of the services around the country, and they basically asked them to fill in the information. And it's very well responded to. So the rate of pay that is currently seen as the average rate of pay across the sector is €11.93. For most people, what they're receiving is considered to be €11.20. So if we were to take out, we'll say, the higher wages, take out the owners, take out the managers, we get down to the actual practitioners, the educators.
Mm-hmm.
And that rate of pay is €11.20 an hour. I am hesitant, but I'm going to say it. I have met so many educators who are not on that.
They're on lower.
They're on lower.
They are, yeah.
So the
and that's the reality, Sabrina.
That's,
you know,
the reality.
It is the reality. And I think that the scary thing is that it's the lower level qualified, the lower qualified practitioner is being paid the lower level of rate of pay. And they are working with the youngest of the children in the baby rooms.
This was something I learned at the Child in Mind event, which was really quite startling. Something I learned at that event was that agency workers and relief workers will very often be put into the baby rooms. Mm-hmm. And it's quite an interesting thing from the public report that they actually earn an even lower rate again. So for relief workers, the average rate of pay is €10.77 an hour.
I didn't know that now, because we don't use relief workers in our setting. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't too sure what the rate of pay was for that.
So that's what's been reported mm-hmm. as the average rate of pay. Now, if we look at how much it costs to live in Ireland, there's a living wage, which is considered to be the bare minimum amount of money required to have a decent standard of life. Now, I mean, decent standard of life is quite subjective.
Are you living with your mammy or are you living in somebody's back shed? Like, depends on what
precisely.
You... Yeah, yeah.
And that rate of pay is considered to be €11.90. So relief workers are earning... 120 approximately less than that, and your average early years educator is earning 70 cents less than the living wage. Now, what we also have to factor in is that there is massive levels of underemployment within early years. It is a sector where 50% of the sector, 50% of workers are working part-time.
Yeah.
So we're not, if we were working a 40-hour week, if early years educators were working a 40-hour week, the wage, while it's still low, it would certainly go to cover at least some part of a decent wage. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are working 15 hours, maybe 20 hours. And the workers who are working 40 hours, for example, are generally some of the lower paid workers again.
They're working in daycare.
Full daycare. Which has its own disadvantages and advantages as well. Mm-hmm.
And also, I think that so you're talking about the pension, you're talking about health, you're just sick pay, not even healthcare. Like mm-hmm. you're talking about being paid for being out sick. You're talking about the rate of pay, and you're talking about. I think the biggest thing for me, and I'm not speaking on behalf of everybody. I'm just saying in my experience and some of my colleagues' experience and friends, that it's not being recognised for the work we're doing. So we all know what's wrong, and we all know working in it what we need to be changed, and what we need so that we feel good about ourselves working, because we all care and we all love what we do. So what, by joining a union, what changes can that make for us professionally amongst others? Like, recognition would be a big thing for me.
Yes.
That I'm recognised as a professional and not just a childminder, or you do that preschooler, you're the teacher in there, but not really a teacher, because I'm not recognised as a primary school teacher. I'm an early years educator. I could be an early years teacher. I'm a childcare. I'm all those things.
There's so many titles.
So many titles. And I think that's what people are all saying, that there's so many titles that we don't really mind what we're called. Some practitioners like to be called a practitioner. I don't know where that came from, because I always thought a practitioner was like a GP, your local practitioner. And then some people like to be called a teacher because they're teaching in a preschool. Mm-hmm. And then others like to be called educator. Now, I know the new five is coming out and they're changed the education to learning. I actually like that. I think it's softer because it's for younger children and they are learning. But it's our identity and the professionalism that I would be looking for help in, you know, that kind of way. So how can SIP2 make our world better, you know?
And recognition is a huge part of what we want to do. There are three pillars on which we've built the Big Start campaign. So in SIP2, we have put together this campaign. It's been running for about 2.5-3 years now.
Okay.
And we're growing quite fast. And the three pillars that we built this campaign on, with massive consultation with the sector itself, is funding, recognition and pay. And all of those things, they are, if you were to draw a Venn diagram, they all link in together. They are all overlapping each other. Funding helps with pay. Pay helps with recognition. Recognition helps with funding.
Yeah, it's you know, a circle.
It is. Absolutely
yeah,
a circle.
Yeah.
And I think when it comes to recognition, I think most people who were working in this sector, they feel recognised when they see the children develop, and they feel quite recognised when, you know, the parents talk to them and say, oh, you do a fantastic job. And I've been in services where parents come in and they're picking up the little ones and they'll say, oh, you know, Emma, she's absolutely mad about you. It's incredible. Yeah. And you can see that Emma's face is beaming mm-hmm. and she's delighted. But Emma's going home with a tenner an hour. And mm-hmm. this is the problem, is that the recognition is not coming from the top down.
Yes.
And that top is not the employer. So we are not looking at the employer as somebody who's withholding pay, because that's not the case. There is a massive problem with underinvestment into childcare in Ireland. At the moment, in the whole early years industry, there's €594 million being put into that from the government, which is at unprecedented levels. And this year they kind of patted themselves on the back and they said, look how much money we're putting in. This is incredible. We've never put so much money in. They're about €1 billion behind the European average.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Before the last budget, we were the second lowest funded in all of the European countries. So at the moment, I think we've actually taken pride of place right at the very bottom.
Wow, aren't we great?
Aren't we fantastic?
That's the end of the world now. Combined. We may go home now. Everything's done. It's all sorted. Close your door there now. And we'll grant.
And we can combine that with the highest childcare costs in the world. So we have the lowest investment with some of the highest childcare costs. Something is wrong. Something is very, very wrong. The system is broken. And what we have...
Sorry, Sabrina. I don't think that the system is broken. I think the system has just... it's kind of like just it's just been built by itself, and the foundations was never there.
Yeah.
So it was like this early years grew up out of the branch instead of really growing from the root. And so we have all these early years that are so dedicated.
Yes.
They have so much care, and no matter what is thrown at them, they carry on. They reform their services. New regulation comes in and they adapt to it, and they're doing all this, and all the time these branches are growing and you have this big trunk that's not held up by anything.
Yeah, and this is actually a very common phrase. People say we are where we are, and they're absolutely 100% right. If we could go back 40 years, we could start from scratch and we could make the most amazing provision of early years education.
Because we have the best people.
100%.
We have the best people there doing it. Yeah.
But unfortunately, long-term planning is not the biggest strength of this country. And I'm not too shy about saying that, to be quite honest. And we have a situation at the moment where in early years education, those best people that you speak of are leaving. Mm-hmm. And the annual rate of turnover is 25%.
That's quite high.
It's huge,
isn't it? For
absolutely
us, that we don't
huge.
Have that much, we don't have that much labour market in the sector, for 25% to be leaving is quite high. It's actually quite scary for an employer.
It is, absolutely. Yeah. There's a massive staffing crisis. And I've spoken to many providers, people who are employers, and I say to them, have you had to look for staff recently? And they say, oh my God, it's a nightmare. And I'm like, yeah, it is a nightmare, because there's nobody out there that wants to do this job. The reason they don't want to do this job is because they can barely cover the cost of their own life at the end of it. Mm-hmm. And one of the scariest things is that we're looking at is a lot of the women that are working in this industry have children themselves. They actually cannot afford the service they provide. And that's a really big thing that we need to step back and look at, is that access to childcare for the people who are working in the sector is unaffordable. That's a big problem. That is a huge mm-hmm. problem. There are so many problems.
And do you think that's why we have a lot of people that are working part-time? Because if they have children, it's the job that they can do that's working part-time, because it's affordable.
There are some people who, for working part-time, it suits and it works and it's flexible for them. And we cannot take away from the fact that for a lot of people, it's a really flexible job that they can take care of their own children, that they can, I mean, some services allow the staff to take their children in at a reduced cost, mm-hmm. some places even free, which is fantastic. Yeah. And
so, Sabrina, what about the students starting? So they're our future. Mm-hmm. So the students come, because I, like, another 10 years, I still won't be down on the floor playing with children and doing my preschool. And if I am, come and get me. But I'm way too old to be doing that. But, you know, the new students coming out, like, I had girls that worked with me that had to leave. They were really good workers and had so much compassion and really good educators, teacher, whatever we call them, really good at what they did. But they left because it was time for them to buy a house.
Yes, yes. And they, this is a huge, huge, huge issue. There's so many huge issues. You're going to hear me say that a few times. There are people in this that are working in this industry, in this professional industry, that cannot afford to get a mortgage. They cannot afford to get a car loan. I recently spoke to a woman who's 45 years of age and she's living with her parents because she cannot afford to rent outside of the home. And it is eating into people's confidence. It's eating into people's value, their level of self-worth. I mean, that's more of a philosophical question and a psychological question. But there are societal pressures that are pushing down on people and they cannot afford to break past them. And that's a really, really difficult situation to be in. But what people really need to do is they need to come together and they need to find their voice. Now, there's a really common graphic that is often used by unions to talk about, basically to illustrate in a very graphic and visual way what the power of a union is. And you might be familiar with it. It's, you see this giant shark and he's chasing after one little fish.
Okay.
And then all the other fish come along and they join the little fish and they all gang up on the giant shark and they chase the giant shark away.
Right. Okay.
It's probably, I don't know if I've described that well, but that's effectively what we need to do, is that we're in a situation where early years, providers, owners, managers, they're fragmented. They're completely fragmented because it's made up, the sector is made up of so many different divisions. Okay. And I'm using the word fragmented carefully. Probably the better word to use would be diverse. It's a very diverse sector. There are community services. There are a lot of private services. There are services that are funded by the HSE. There are part-time services, sessional. There are corporate chains. There are lots of
after
different
school
groups.
Preschool, Montessori, high scope, different kind of working areas. That there's a lot. There's child minders, which are very important to the community. The after schoolers, the after school girl that gets into a car and picks all the children up and brings them back to the daycare. She's a worker. She's part of it.
Yeah.
So, what can joining a union, what can being part of a bigger organisation, not being so diverse and coming together. So what can we achieve by doing that?
What can we achieve? So there is a very, very clear path for what SIPTU and the Big Start are going to do. And it's not what we, you know, well, not what we kind of think about doing or not what we're, you know, kind of homing and hawing about doing. This is what we are going to do and this is what is going to happen. And it's a very clear and very simple process in order for what steps we need to take. It's a complex process when we get into the ins and outs of it, but I'll come to that later. Basically, at the moment, there are about in the region of 20,000 people working in early years education that should be in the union. Okay.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I believe in it. I strongly believe that there has to be somebody else speaking on our behalf.
And we need to get one third of that. OK, so we're looking at around kind of 6,500 people. And when we have one third of those people, so this 6,500 people in membership of the Big Start, we can go to the Labour Court. Now, this is where some people kind of glaze over and they say, oh, my God, this is going to get into really legal things.
Go make the cup of tea.
Oh, I'm terrified of this. But it's effectively what's going to happen is SIPTU will go on behalf of the membership to the Labour Court. And we will apply for a sectoral employment order. This is a piece of legislation which sets out minimum rates of pay for the sector. And we are applying for a government funded sectoral employment order so that we can have pay scales, professional pay scales, so that everybody working within the sector has a point on the scale and that's what you should be paid.
For a certain level of qualification and experience.
So this is where there will be a period of consultation that will take place. It takes about 4 to 6 months. And all of the stakeholders within the industry will have an opportunity to have their say put in their spake, as they say, mm-hmm. into this consultation. So to say, right, how does this work? How does this work for a sessional service that provides ECCE only? How does this work for a private service that's attached to somebody's house? How does this work for the full daycare service? And this is where it needs to be ironed out. So that diversity is a challenge. It's not a complete insurmountable obstacle, not at all. It's just, it's a challenge that needs to be looked at. And we need to figure out how to lay down those pay scales. And that is one of the biggest challenges, is that, okay, do we just go on what's your qualification? It's not really fair to the people who've worked in it for 20 years. Okay, do we go with years of experience? Not really fair to the 23-year-old who's got a level 8 degree.
Yeah.
So there is a balance that needs to be struck with all of this. And that does take time, and it does take consultation. And that is something that's going to have to happen. But ultimately, we need to have pay scales, professional pay scales. And most importantly, and this is what I'm going to stress to any owners and providers who are listening, this is government funded. Okay, so this, the aim of these pay scales is for basically that gigantic wage bill to be under government funding.
So how would that work? So like if I, like I'm a private sector, so mm-hmm. I register children with the free scheme, preschool from 2 years and 8 months, and Pubble pays me.
Yeah.
So the Department of Child, Children Youth Affairs. So they pay me. So effectively, even though I run my own premises, and I pay all my bills and pay the girls, they pay my fees.
Yeah.
So they come out and they say, right, this is the new fee. This is the new wage increase. So your level 6 are going to be on €12. Your level 7 is going to be on 13, whatever, blah, 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 whatever. Mm-hmm. So is it really not up to me to pay them? Like, why should the government pay them?
Yeah, so this is a question that has come up, and a couple of different owners have asked me the question of, am I going to lose control? I mean, am I going to suddenly have a dictate in my business? And how does that work? Like, who, like, why is the government paying them? Well, effectively at the moment, what's happening is we've got all of these subsidies, and most businesses are being paid for by the government.
Yeah.
And particularly if we look at, you know, ECCE scheme, it is a rather small amount of money that's being paid per child. And it's a very strict set amount. This is what you get. And you have to pay for everything out of it. You've got to pay for your light. You've got to pay for your heat, your bills, your rent.
Rates.
Yeah, your rates, your rent, all of these things.
Yeah.
And it needs to be covered underneath that. And for most people, they're just about covering. Just about. But the problem is this is trying to balance a half decent wage for the staff.
Yeah.
And realistically, at the moment, that money that's currently going in for, and I'm just going to take that particular instance.
Yes.
That money that's going in, that's funding each child in that service. It's not really, there's no wiggle room to give your staff a raise. So what we need to do is we need to increase that funding.
Right. Okay.
In order to get more money into it. But if we are putting more money into the sector, the government want an assurance about where that's going.
That's what I feel. I think that it, and I think it is good, because if you have, like, as an employer, if I have a guideline mm-hmm. to say that, you know, somebody's coming in with a level 5, what their expectations are, what my expectations to pay them, and if I decide to pay them more, well, then that's my choice. But for the practitioner or the employee, she should know that coming into my service, she's allowed earn. She should be at a certain rate
yeah.
starting off. And it's just everybody is all on the same page. And so no matter what service you go to, if you're a level 5, I know I'm going to get paid £10.50 or €10.50. Mm-hmm. And then when I'm level 6 and I have 4 more years experience, I'm going to be at a such. So it's like a career.
Yes.
So you're making a career for young future practitioners that yes. are coming into the sector.
And yeah. I think it's a really important point that you've brought up, that, okay, if I'm at level 5 at the moment and I'm on €11 an hour, for example, and I know that if I progress to level 6 that, you know, I can get that pay increase. At the moment, there is no incentive for anybody
oh, no.
to upskill.
Yeah.
And people are doing it because they want to do it. People are doing it because they are passionate about doing it. And they want to give the best service that they can. But it's getting increasingly more difficult. There are there are thousands of educators, and I'm using that word, but like, you know what I mean? There are thousands of educators out there who have told me, they've said, Sabrina, I cannot afford to go back to university or go back to college and to study this. I can't afford it. I have three kids. I have...
Oh, even like these girls, working with me, and they're young girls, like, you know, and they're living at home. They're paying for the car. They're existing on a wage. They would probably be working more than 30 hours a week. And there's girls that are working in as preschool teachers. Then they have a job as the lady that picks children up from school to drop them to other crèches, or they could be that practitioner that does preschool in the morning or Montessori and then does childminding in the afternoon. Yes. And these are not married women with children. These are young women choosing to work in earlier sector, and they're supplementing their real work, their professional work with, I don't mean to be saying that childminding and after school, I mean it's outside an organisation. So they are supplementing their day-to-day wages with childminding and after school.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's not saying that there's not enough hours. A lot of the work, a lot of services won't do afternoon play schools because it's not worth their while because they have to pay staff.
Yeah.
So even though there may be a demand for afternoon play schools, the service providers can't do it because there's a lack of staff, and then it's more wages and more responsibility. So you have all these premises that are not working to the best ability because it's a full circle, as you said, Sabrina. It comes back around. So what's the answer?
Oh, if we had the answer, we could wave a magic
that
wand.
That golden goose come along the floor there. Look at him.
Well, it's a really complicated sector, and there is absolutely no point in making any bones about that. It is a complicated problem that needs to be fixed, and fixing it is not going to take one budget or one magic wave of a magic wand, but there are certain steps that we can take towards making this a much more equitable and fair place for people to work in. We often hear the words quality and affordability, and these things, quality, everybody cares about quality. Everybody cares about quality.
It's fundamental.
It is. It's fundamental. Yeah, it's fundamental. And affordability is really important because at the moment, parents are paying extortionate amounts of money. But I would flip the affordability word on itself and say, it's not affordable for parents, but it's also not affordable for the people who are working in the sector. It's not affordable for them to continue with this job and with this career. Mm-hmm. And it's time for the people working in the sector to sit up and say, actually, hold on, I'm not getting a fair share of this pie. Because if we go back to what we were looking at in earlier on, and we were talking about the current rates of pay. At the moment, early years educators on a base level, on average, are being paid €11.20 an hour. There was some research done by Mercer, which you may be familiar with. They did a lot of benchmarking, and they're an independent consulting firm. Mm-hmm. And they did some research into if the sky was blue and the world was a lovely, fair, equitable place, what people should be paid. And let's remember that €11.20, okay? They're saying that a level 5 early years educator walking in the door first day, starting rate should be €13.28. Now, that is ambitious, and it's unaffordable for providers to pay that. That's out of reach. At the moment, it would shut services down, and that's a scary prospect. But what we need to do is we need to work towards that with the help of government investment. Now, we did some calculations that were really quite startling. And if we were to look at the current rates of pay for full-time staff, early years educators on a base level on €11.20 an hour are being underpaid annually by about €4,500. For managers on a full-time basis, that rises to €10,000 of what they are being underpaid by every year. And when I say underpaid, what I mean is undervalued as well. Mm-hmm. Because value and money, let's face it, they're intrinsically linked to each other.
Yeah. So if we get together and we all start saying, okay, we love what we do, let's fight for our sector, And as you were saying, what was that saying you said? The more we stand together, the more we can get things done.
Oh, the united we stand, divided we fall.
Divided we fall. So, you know, so maybe that is the answer. So maybe we should all start saying, you know, okay, I'm in my little bubble there in Lucan and I take care of myself. I take care of the girls that work with me and I take care of the children and the families. Mm-hmm. But I need to start looking at myself and saying, it's time that I stood up and it's time that I took part.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. At the moment, we're at a point in the campaign where we have built to about 3,000 people, a little bit less than 3,000 people. And some of the listeners are probably going to scoff when I say this. We need 6,000 at a very, very, very minimum.
Okay.
And people say, oh, all right, so it's a little bit less than halfway. I disagree with that. And I know my maths might be a little bit skewed in this. I would consider that 75% of the way.
Okay.
Because I know that 3,000 is half of 6,000. The first person you get to sign up is the hardest person. And I would love to know who was the first person to sign the form
that
first.
Would. If you're out there, will you come? Come on, get onto that website and tell me.
Yeah, I want to know, like, what made you be the first person to join? At the moment, we are growing by, like, probably about 70 people a week at the moment. So that's growing. That's growing fast. There was a time where that was one a week. That was one a month, you know?
Okay.
So it's like a rolling stone. It gets faster and faster and faster. And we're picking up momentum. At the moment, if every person who was signed up to our campaign and signed up in union membership turned to their colleague and said, hey, so what's the story? Are you in the union? Do you know about this? You think you should sign up? We'd be going to the Labour Court tomorrow morning.
Okay.
And it is the responsibility of everybody involved in this sector to make a decision whether or not they want to allow the government to dictate how much funding goes into this for the rest of your career and stay at a rate of pay that you're currently on, or sit up and say, you know what, actually, I think we should have a say in this. Mm-hmm. And you've got a decision to make because there is power in people. We've seen that in this country.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So we're at a point where people need to actually make that decision and make that decision for themselves, because this cannot happen without you. It is impossible for this to happen without you. And we need every single person on board with this. And I'm going to be real cheeky here, and I'm going to say the people who are not signed up are holding it back.
Yeah.
The people who are sitting on the fence, waiting to make a decision, trying to decide what to do, you're slowing the process down.
And really, in fairness, at this stage, if we don't do it ourselves, it's not going to happen.
No. No one's going to do it for you.
Yeah. And it hasn't happened in the past. So going forward and being positive, because we have to.
Yeah.
And things are changing, and things are changing for the good. Mm-hmm. And you're sitting here in front of me, and we wouldn't have had this 5 years ago. You know, so it's changing, and it's changing for the good. And absolutely delighted that you gave me time to talk to you.
I'm so delighted and, to talk to you.
I think we're going to be friends for life. But anyway, but I think that people need to look out. How can they contact you? How can they find out about SIP2?
Yes, absolutely. So we've got a website, bigstart.ie. We've got the Facebook page, Big Start. You'll find us there. If people wanted to join up, which would be absolutely fantastic, send us a message on Facebook or send us an email, info@bigstart.ie. You can go to bigstart.ie/join. Basically, put Big Start into Google,
top of your phone or wherever it is.
And it doesn't matter what part of the country you're in. We have organisers working on this up and down the country, from Donegal to Cork to Wexford to Mayo to my own little patch up in Fingal.
Okay.
We will put you in touch with somebody that can you can meet them face to face, and we'll guide you through whatever needs to happen. But it's actually about taking the first step and saying, okay, I want to know more information about it. Engage with us and we'll be there.
Just Google it, girls. Do you hear them? And that 2% men. Just Google it and you'll find all about it. Sabrina, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Okay, so that was Sabrina Ryan from SIP2. And I thank her again for taking time out on a Friday afternoon. She's very kind and automatically said, yeah, straight away to an interview. So they're her ideas. She'd a lot to say, and I think she knows what she's talking about. I think she's very, very interested in the sector and moving it forward. and her, you know, her big plans for Big Start. I wish her well, and I hope she does. I hope she gets some members, and I hope people listening will actually start thinking about their own professional practice and where they want to go and what they want to do with it. And it really doesn't matter what member or what organization you become, once you do something. And I think that's the message Sabrina was saying, that, you know, the sector really needs to do something now, that and that by getting a voice and everybody doing it together and everybody actually doing something, I think change can be made. And I think we can, working together and just, you know, just not expecting somebody else to do it for you. I think if we all have that attitude, I don't think the sector is ever going to change. So all you young students, you young women, getting ready to go out there to start your practice, service providers, practitioners that are already out there, take it upon yourself to think about you and think about where your career, your profession needs to move to. And, you know, I really do think you all should start doing something, and let's get the people that are making our policies and are in charge of the way the sector is going to start listening to us. Right, so thanks again, Sabrina. It was a great chat, and Liberty Hall is actually really quite nice. There's a nice feeling going into it, even though it's very old-fashioned. Okay, so you know how to get in contact with me. Get onto your podcast, wherever you stream it down to. Look for Sweepy Podcast. Get onto the Twitter, Sweepy Podcast, and you can use LinkedIn and look for Loretta McDonough, and I'm there. And you can also send me an email on SP, the podcast, theearlyyears@gmail.com. So that's sppodcast@gmail.com. So that's it for another episode, okay? So join me again, please do, and share these episodes with your friends, and let's try and get as many listeners as we can so we can make some difference. So until the next time, be kind to yourself and take care. This has been Loretta McDonough on Sweepy Podcast, The Early Years. You have been listening to Sweepy Podcast, The Early Years with Loretta McDonough. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcast, and do share the podcast with friends, colleagues, or students who may be interested. And please rate and review us on iTunes. If you've got something you'd love us to cover, drop us an email at sppodcasttheearlyyears@gmail.com, or follow us on Twitter, or check our webpage at sweepypodcast.ie. Thank you for listening, and until the next time, be kind to yourself and take care.